You're listening to the Fueled and Free podcast. I'm your host, Margaret, a holistic nutritionist, bringing you real talk and thought-provoking conversations on food, the wellness world, women's health topics, and life. Remember, the information shared in this podcast is not to be taken as individual or medical advice. Welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Lindsay Bell. She is a clinical psychologist and coach who helps people master their minds, optimize their performance, reduce stress, and find a deeper level of fulfillment. I stumbled upon her Instagram a while back and was really drawn to her account because her images are gorgeous. She also lives on 30A, like me, here in the Santa Rosa Beach area of Florida. And I was also very captivated by her no-nonsense yet gentle approach. On this episode, we talk about things like the common roadblocks that stop women from reaching their goals or achieving a higher version of themselves. We talk about realistic goal setting, self-sabotage, finding that balance of contentment versus being complacent versus pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. We also dive in a little bit on things like ADHD and dopamine-seeking behaviors. I love towards the end, she really talks more about the mainstream view of aging. I've been super inspired to follow her journey as she's been doing like more competitive water skiing, and she's in her early 40s, and she's a mom and works. And I just think it's really inspiring to see women in that age group, which I would say is an age group where a lot of women start to limit themselves on what they're able to do physically, and just kind of allow their circumstances to determine what their abilities are or what they're able to do. And I loved her perspective on aging and what that actually can look like. As you know, social media is full of online coaches, life coaches, therapists, gurus, and we for sure are not short of personal development. What I've found enlightening about Dr. Lindsay as well is how she really encourages life design and works alongside her clients to help them peel back and really assess and reflect on what they want their life to look like. This is something my husband and I have really prioritized in our marriage and in our family, especially over the last handful of years. And this idea of life design is a big reason why we relocated our family from Pennsylvania to Florida, because we felt like part of our non-negotiable, or one of the things we really visualize or envision for our family, was having a more outdoor lifestyle. And we didn't feel like we could fully have that in Pennsylvania. And for us, it meant we're going to relocate to a state where we can truly live a more outdoor lifestyle. And one of the things that I know as a nutritionist that works with women with chronic health issues and gut issues and hormonal symptoms, we also work with men as well, is there's a huge overlap between how your day-to-day life shakes out and how it affects your physical and mental health. And for some that are in pursuit of a healthier body, more energy, more strength, it has to coincide with revamping life design, meaning your career choices, your calendar, your social influences and your social circles, your spending habits, your thoughts. And Dr. Lindsay shares more about this on this episode, and this is something that I know she really dives in with her clients. So it was a really fun discussion. I hope you enjoy, and you can check out the show notes to give her a follow on Instagram. And if you have any questions, of course, you can reach out to her there, and have a good rest of your day. All righty. Well, I'm excited. So Lindsay, welcome to the Fueled and Free podcast. I'm excited to have you on today. And I was thinking back how I initially found your Instagram account was when we moved down to the 30A area. I think someone else shared some of the beach photography that you do. And I was like, this woman's photography is amazing. And then I started reading what you wrote, and just felt really drawn to kind of your no-nonsense approach on the mindset coaching stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of the things I read are things that I know I need in the moment. And I know a lot of my clients can benefit from hearing. And I know certainly many of our listeners can benefit from hearing. So I brought you on today to share a little bit more about your story, how you work with clients, and give us a little bit of a pep talk, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, it's funny because people usually find me because of photography. And I'm a, you know, clinical psychologist and a coach, but photography and art is a huge passion of mine. And I don't know, I feel like Instagram can get really monotonous, and you got to have fun with it and do it the way that you want. So I don't follow any of the rules with like how to run a business in 2024. So I share my art, I talk about things that are on my mind, and I try to, anything that I post, like I want somebody to walk away with something, like a value to them of substance, even if it's just seeing something that connects them to nature, or if it's a new thought and something to process and integrate into their life, or to reduce stress, or, you know, or just validate people. So that kind of been my philosophy. So yeah, I loved that we connected because we started talking about poodles, because we both have a poodle. You've got two, I've got one. Yeah. And then I looked you up and I was like, oh, wow, okay. I mean, I feel like we should be friends too. So, but I started out, my dad's a clinical psychologist. I grew up in a house that was very focused on talking about your feelings and behaviors and rooted in rational thinking. So I wanted to be like my dad when I grew up. I went to college. I went right to graduate school in New York City, and then just kind of followed the traditional route of a psychologist.
Yeah.
Worked in a school full time. And in the evenings, I worked part time working with adults and adolescents, children, families, just more traditional therapy. And then I kind of hit this point where I felt like I needed to work on myself and my own life, because while I loved helping people, I didn't feel happy with how I was living my life. And I had a lot of feelings like, you know, how can I change my life now? It's too late. I've already gone down this route. And so right around that time, I had my son, and I quit everything. I quit my job. We sold our home. My husband quit his job. We moved to Florida, started out on this new adventure, and I really focused on applying everything I knew and taking the life philosophy that I was trained in to help my clients with and applying it to my own life. And so that's kind of been like the work in progress over time. But yeah, so that's what I share. I share a lot of my personal stories and so forth, and
yeah,
people either love it or they don't like it, and that's what it is. Yeah.
When you moved to Florida, was that during COVID or pre-COVID?
It was pre. We came down in 2015.
Okay.
A month, and bought property so that no one could convince us not to. And then went north and said, we're moving to Florida. So we officially moved like right around New Year's, like 2016.
Okay. So you were doing this at a time before. I mean, I feel like a lot of people from the north moved down to the south during COVID.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before it was a thing.
Yeah. Now it's like more of a thing. Okay. So super fascinating. And were you in New Hampshire before?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I was born and raised in New York City, went to school in New York City. And then I got my first job in New Hampshire. We lived right in Concord, New Hampshire.
Okay. Yeah. So you left a totally different pace of life for now, as you like to say, living on your own terms, which I love. That really resonates with me personally. How did you start out doing the online coaching? Because you're working in a way that's very different from how most clinical psychologists work now.
Yeah. Well, I thought that psychologists were behind the times. Mm-hmm. Because I saw the coaching industry booming and found it frustrating and upsetting that, because I know psychologists know so much and have so much to offer, and I felt like they were kind of being left in the dust for people who were more entrepreneurial minded and like jumping on the online world. But there's reasons. I mean, there's a lot where psychologists, we have like a really strong ethical code. I mean, I took like years of ethics, and every time I have to renew a license one third of the time is on ethics. Like, it's really, really important. So I think things move slower for that reason, because you have to factor things in with like the online space, right? So, but a lot changed during COVID, and like teletherapy really, I mean, if there's like a silver lining of that time, I think that finding ways to work from home, teletherapy, telemedicine, like all of that stuff really exploded. And I mean, like, it's the way of the future, right? Like, yeah. It's what it is, like it or leave it, but it's what it is. So yeah, so I just started kind of navigating this and how to do it in a way that I could help people, that worked for my lifestyle, and that was also ethical. And that's very how I've navigated it.
So what is the type of clientele that you mainly work with? I mean, it seems like a lot of the stuff that you preach is about like realistic goal setting, helping people fix their habits, getting really clear on what their vision and their goals are. Do you mainly work with entrepreneurial minded people or all kinds of different?
Yeah, I mean, I don't just like say that's who I work with, but it's what attracts a lot of people to working with me. And it makes sense, because entrepreneurs are, they're really into personal development, and they understand that to be at the top of their game and develop, they need to work on their own mind and how they think and like their habits and so forth. Like, I mean, entrepreneurs love that. They love biohacking. Like, they want to be at the top of their performance, and they're more, I think, willing to like invest in themselves. So naturally it's a good fit. But I also work with like more traditional business owners as well, especially because business owners tend to be burnt out and they need more balance and like stress reduction. So I work with a lot of busy business owners as well. Some athletes, and then just people that are, they're like go-getters. They care about their health and their fitness. You know, I feel like people like you and me, like maybe their moms and so forth, and they're just feeling like they want more in life. So maybe they're not entrepreneurs like yet, but the idea is there and they just like don't know what to do with it. So And then I still do some traditional therapy. Like, I don't advertise for it, but like people who know me and I get referrals, and I like the variety. So that's my practice.
Okay. So what do you feel like are some of the common roadblocks or stumbling points for people that are like, I want to level up, or I need to get my insert thing, right? I want to get my eating habits back on track, or I want to lose 10 pounds. I mean, I know that you don't do like health coaching necessarily, but there is such an overlap in, even in my work. Like, I get clients that come to me that are like, I want to lose 15 pounds and fix my bloating and get my period back on track. And we do these labs, we get these results back. You kind of lay out like, all right, this is how we're going to get you there. But there is a block mentally for some people on even just getting started, or there's a lot of overwhelm, or just kind of like a, you know, resistance to actually seeing these things stick, or they're on for a little bit and they fall off. It's like a perfectionism. I don't know. And it can be frustrating from my end. And I've navigated this in my own health goals. Like, I've had seasons where you're just like burned out and you're like, yeah, I know I need to do this, but I don't feel like it.
Yeah. A lot of my clients, you know, they do have like health goals as well, because I mean, to have like a well-balanced life, I mean, health is like really important. That will typically be integrated with like, especially somebody that need balance, like usually health is like out the window. Usually there's something going on with like how a person is thinking. And there's a lot of self-sabotage at play. And I try to use that word gently, because defenses can really go up when people hear the word self-sabotage. But, you know, I say it with love, because I get it too, because I'm busy as well. I'm a mom. Like, I've got all those things, and like, I totally get it. But perfectionism, procrastinating, not being able to balance like short-term rewards with long-term goals. Like those are all things that are like within one's control. So if you're struggling in those areas, it's the form of self-sabotage. Like nobody's like really self-sabotaging on purpose. It's like very, very rare that somebody really is. So that tends to be the main thing that I see. People who tend to argue for their limitations, a lot of irrational beliefs about oneself and so forth, struggling with frustration tolerance. You know, it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. Getting really down on oneself, not having rational goals and like not understanding the timeline of how long things take. And I know you and I had a little conversation about that once, like,
yeah,
DMs about how things take a really long time, you know?
Yes.
And that's hard for people. That's really hard. And people want to see like big results really quickly, or they give up. So there's a lot of self-defeating sort of things that are blocking people from their goals.
Yeah, I see that a lot right now, especially as we're approaching summer, and I'm already seeing just certain type of content on social media in the coaching industry. Part of that is just what the algorithm sends me because I'm in the health and wellness and nutrition world, but I'm starting to see language that's like, we're 6 weeks away from summer. Join our 6 week blah, da, 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 to try to help people jumpstart maybe a weight loss journey or eating habits. And it's all very well-intentioned, but at the same time, like knowing how long it takes to implement, you know, certain health habits, 6 weeks is barely scratching the surface on a weight loss journey.
Yeah. And we're like constantly bombarded by social media. I mean, if you look at how much time you spend on that place, like even mm-hmm. if you're conscious about it, it's kind of sickening, right? you know, you see that and there's a lot, like, even if you think it doesn't affect you like that, it does. It plants, it's like the movie Inception, like it plants like little seeds in there, you know, but good sales psychology plays upon short-term solutions to make people feel better and get them to buy really quickly. So it kind of plays on this whole thing, you know, like, do you want to buy something where a person's like, listen, it's going to take 2 years for you to do this, like, and really be where you want? Or do you want to hear like, you know, get, you know, ripped abs in 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
What are people going to buy? And then you're tired, right? It's like 10 o'clock at night. You're on Netflix and you're seeing that on your phone and you want the 6 week abs.
So
I mean, it plays upon it. So like, we have these, you know, these irrational beliefs, and they're reinforced all over the place. And this is one place I notice a lot of it being, you know, reinforced on social media. So I think for me, that's why I tend to be kind of non-traditional with like how other people are using social media in the coaching industry. Cause I don't want to say that to people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I totally can relate. But then you're also reconciling like the marketing side. And it's true, you definitely show up in a non-traditional way with social media in the, you know, in the context of how you preach, what you're sharing. You know, when it comes to helping people kind of figure out, all right, let's change some of these thoughts that you're having. Let's maybe remove some of the things that are being a detriment or a distraction. How important is it for people to go all in and make huge change versus doing things very small and incrementally?
So long-term sustainable results, like really, I use like the 1%
mm-hmm.
and 0.5%. of like a little area and just like chipping away at certain little pieces to get those results. Going big typically just burns you out and is mm-hmm. not sustainable. So like, I always say to people, like, if you work on your goal, like for like one day you like hammer it really hard, then you don't touch it for like 8 days and then you hammer it hard. Like, it's just not nearly as good as like spending 20 minutes on something every single day,
right?
And working on little things over and over and over those little incremental things, they really, really add up. Honestly, just think it's how we work. Like, it's just how we work, like, for real change. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, what's sustainable? You know, like, what are you going to actually do long term? It's
right.
Not going to be those big, giant things. And sometimes people have like an aha moment or something like that, or like a sort of mental awareness that's like a massive shift. But like, when it comes to like the day to day actions and habits and behaviors, like, a little bit every single day, and you'll blow your mind at what you can change, actually. Like, what, you know, I kind of joke when I say like 2 years, it's not like there's nothing and then 2 years you see something, right? Usually, to get to that bigger picture of what somebody wants, it's going to be a longer process. But I always tell people that's a good thing, because if you can accomplish something in like 4 to 8 weeks, like, it's probably too small of a goal, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so true.
So, you know, just kind of reframing it that way and recognizing like, yeah, this is like really big and it's going to take time, you know, that kind of just makes you feel better thinking about it that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How much do you think the ADHD thing plays into all of this? Because that's another thing that I'm seeing so much about, you know, many people self-diagnosing,
yeah,
leading to the different viral reels that you see in the viral accounts where you're like, is it ADHD that is making me procrastinate this looming to-do list that I seem to bump into the next week and the next week and the next week?
Yeah. So I believe, first of all, ADHD, I do believe it's real. I know that you'll have some people who say they don't think it's real and they think it's just cultural and so forth. I say that because I have seen and worked with people where it was no doubt in my mind that, especially like children, when I've worked in the school setting and so forth, like, it is very real for a group of people. And I think sometimes to say, I've seen things where experts will say, it's not, it's just, we, you know, have these expectations or whatever. And I feel like it's so invalidating to that group of people and to those parents. So I just want to say that first, I do think ADHD is real. Now, I totally see the other side of what you're saying, and I 100% agree with that too. You know, one thing, did you ever take like a clinical psych class in college by any chance?
Yes, I did. Yes.
What do you do? Everyone wants to diagnose themselves and everyone they know when you learn about every single disorder, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to like, is it impacting your life? Like, that's a really big one, right? Like if you see somebody who's like achieved everything and it hasn't been a problem, but then they're trying to diagnose, I'm kind of like, you're actually doing really well in life. You know what I mean?
Right.
It doesn't seem to be an actual problem for you. And then there's skill deficits that everyone can have that also people with ADHD tend to have more problems with. Like, time management is hard for a lot of people. That just because you have poor time management does not mean you have ADHD. And also, if you have ADHD and you have poor time management, that doesn't mean you're screwed with poor time management for the rest of your life. You can work on building that skill, whether you have ADHD or you don't, right? Low frustration tolerance is another one. Like, not being able to, you know, saying I can't handle that. Like, it's too much. It's too hard, right? Wanting to avoid things. Like, that's something you frequently see with ADHD, mm-hmm. but also something you see with a lot of people who don't have ADHD. Our culture also really, I mean, people's attention spans are like 3 seconds. I don't even know if they're that much now. Like, when you're going through reels, like, you know, it's wild. So a lot of those things play into ADHD. Our culture plays into ADHD kind of things as well. So I think there's both. I think both are true.
Yeah.
It's real, but not everyone has ADHD.
Yeah.
One more thing on that.
Yeah.
When I hear people wanting to diagnose themselves with things like ADHD, it's to excuse why they're having a hard time.
Oh, totally. Totally. I can definitely.
Because this just must be how I am. And, you know, that's why it's so hard for me. And that's why I'm never going to be able to do so forth and for me.
I also see in my world, a lot of hormonal imbalances, especially for women that are entering into that kind of perimenopausal stage of life. If your thyroid is just slightly underfunctioning, those types of imbalances can drive a lot of that, you know, brain fog, difficulty concentrating, spaciness. Oh, I lost my words, or I forgot what I was supposed to be doing. And, you know, a lot of women can get in this loop of then self-deprecating of like, oh, I'm so forgetful. I have ADHD, or I can't stay consistent. I'm not good at this stuff.
And the same thing for kids, because like you can also give kids a lot of help them with their diets, their sleep, like do a lot of different kind of like training at home with like organization and, you know, different kind of executive functioning skills and see a lot of progress as well there. Or I used to work in two different elementary schools. One of them started the day with recess. The other one was recess lunch. The one that started with recess, I found that the kids had less behavior problems because they ran around the playground for 30 minutes. So like there's all of those sort of things. And there's a lot of over self diagnosing of ADHD. And there's also lots of other things that are going on because, you know, ADHD is like you have a dysfunction with like executive functioning, essentially. But you know what else causes those issues? Anxiety, not sleeping, not eating. So there's so many different things, you know, at play. And whether you have ADHD or not, you can build those deficits up. So like, even if you want to say like, I just have ADHD, like I'm not going to be able to do better. That's not true at all. Like I've worked with so many people with ADHD. I have clients right now that are high level entrepreneurs that were diagnosed with ADHD when they were kids. Like they worked really hard to build up those areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
My husband. Good at, they've learned how to outsource those to other people and focus on zone of genius.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see one of the things you shared about on Instagram the other day that was so good? It was about not allowing others to waste your time and how when you allow others to waste your time, it's a form of, how did you explain it? Not allowing others to waste your time is a form of self-respect.
Yeah, like a high level form of self-respect. Because you never let somebody steal $20 from you, but you would let people just rob you of 20 minutes of your life, like all the time. And time is like, I mean, it's the most non-renewable, valuable resource you possibly can have. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the wealthiest person in the world, like you cannot buy more time. It's so, so, so precious. So really understanding that your life, you know, your time is limited. Like you can never really like add more to the time bank that you have, and you never know how much time you actually have left, right? Like really understanding that concept and then being really mindful of how your time is spent and where it's spent and setting up boundaries, like being okay with potentially upsetting someone because you need to protect your time. That's not hard to do. Like a lot of people are people pleasers. You know, they'll sit there, right? I had a client say that they didn't get any work done because they went to the grocery store. They ran into somebody they knew and the person wanted to talk and talk and talk and talk. And it was like a 2-hour grocery store trip. And then the day was over, right? It's like being able to say to somebody like, hey, like it was great seeing you, but like I unfortunately can't have a conversation right now. I'm grabbing 3 things and then I have to go work. That's hard for a lot of people because what if that person's upset or, you know, or whatever, right? So being able to put those boundaries in and enforce them and follow them is, yeah, I think that's like ultimate self-respect.
Do you think women have a harder time with this than men?
Yeah.
Why?
I think women tend to really struggle with people pleasing in general more. It's not all or nothing or an absolute sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's always exceptions, right? But women really struggle with people pleasing. And I think it's like a cultural thing with how women think they're supposed to be. And, you know, but yeah, I see it more with women.
Absolutely. I see it too in the context of being a mom with our schedules, especially when the kids enter school and then you have like the birthday party invitation on Saturday and it's a 45 minute drive one way and sports and play dates. And suddenly your time is just not yours at all. And it's reconciling even that like mom guilt. I struggle with that a little bit. The mom guilt situation of like,
we all do.
Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah. I mean, this is my world. I'm immersed in it. And sometimes I still think like, you know, am I doing a good enough job as a mom?
Yeah.
Why? Like my kid had an amazing weekend or week or whatever. And I'm still thinking like, oh, like, you know, should I do better? I think it's just this sick thing we do as moms. So I, you know, with mom guilt, I say the second you feel yourself having mom guilt, come back to your rational thinking and like get yourself out of there. But yeah, people pleasing is really hard. And like, you know, being okay with like disappointing others. And I'm not saying actively trying to hurt people. There's like a distinct difference here, you know, but it's not your responsibility to make other people happy and to feel good and to do what they wish that you would do. And you can be, usually people are understanding, but even if they weren't understanding, like you have to do what's best for you and protect your time. And I think that to say no to people and do what you need to do with your time is very, very hard for a lot of people.
How do you navigate that in the context of someone's marriage or relationship with among spouses where you get someone that comes to you, they're trying to get their, you know, their life back on track. And maybe their main stumbling block on that is expectations from their spouse. What does that look like?
Like somebody wants to take care of their health and do things, you mean, and their spouse is like not for it?
Yeah. Or even just in the context of like, you know, I have found one of the things that's really changed within our marriage. We've been married now for almost 15 years, which is crazy. We were so young when we got married. But earlier in our marriage, when the kids were little and I was a stay-at-home mom and not working, I assumed a ton of the household responsibilities. And there was a huge shift that had to happen when I started working again of like, hey, I'm no longer going to be the main person to run all the errands and do all the laundry and do all this and this and this, because I am now working all day as well, you know, and there were a ton of conversations that had to happen and just reframing like how we approach the household and the calendar and the kids and everything. And I see that with some of my clients. I see it with some of my friends where they want to make certain changes, like going back to work or going back to school, chasing after some goal. But in order to do that, they have to get some of their things off their plate and maybe hand it off to their spouse or partner. And I find that some people just stay stuck because they don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing about like, you're not responsible for everyone else's happiness. I mean, it applies to your spouse too.
Mm-hmm.
It's all how things are, you know, communicated too. So when I say that statement, that doesn't mean, you know, you say, screw you and you're on and figure it out. Like there's nice ways to sit down and communicate. And you'd, I mean, hope that that flexibility would kind of go both ways, because that's right. It shouldn't just be one person who has to make all the changes and so forth. But I think there is this belief that some people have, like, I must make my spouse happy or do exactly, you know, it'd be awful if I disrupted or inconvenienced him.
Yes.
You know, haven't before. And I'm, you know, it's my job to make sure that blah, blah, blah. Like, those are all irrational beliefs. You know, there's ways to kind of, you know, work through that and you know, I think it's just a fundamental thing to realize that like everyone's responsible for their own happiness in life. And like when you're married, there is a partnership that you're like going through life together. And I'm married, it'll be 14 years this summer. So I'd like to think I figured some of it out. At least 14 years worth, right? Of things, but you know, I'm not responsible for making my husband happy.
Yeah.
He's not responsible for making me happy. And if you try to, I mean, I think ultimately you're just going to fail.
Yeah. In the context of like you're even within your own marriage, when you guys made that huge decision to move from your normal 9 to 5 and then you're working nights to moving down to a new state, probably no family down here, right?
No, none.
What did that look like for you guys in the context of just like rebuilding a literally brand new life?
Yeah.
Totally uprooting everything that you thought to be your normal.
It was definitely wild. It was an adventure for sure. And there was a lot of figuring things out. And sometimes mistakes were made and sometimes we made good choices. We just kind of navigated it together and never blamed one another when there were times that were hard. You know, we also did this with a baby, right? Like, you know, so like throw a baby in to it. And my son was just not a good sleeper. So we were really tired a lot of the time and navigating all of this stuff out. But yeah, I mean, I went from, you know, working a job and a half to like walking away from all of that. Like, you know, we didn't like our income, like I think it was slashed less than more than half, right?
More than
like, you know, it was maybe reckless in some ways, but also it wasn't in many ways because we, you know, we made some good choices. And I also trusted our ability to figure things out. And I knew, like, I like to think I'm a educated, competent person, and my husband is as well, and he's got a lot of skills. And so I kind of trusted that we would figure it out. Cause what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
You got to figure it out. In fact, I always tell people, like, I think things are easier to figure out when, like, you're under that fire.
Mm-hmm. So
when you have a cushy paycheck coming in and all of those sort of things, like, it's really easy not to make change. But I've got, you know, clients, I said to them, you could do exactly what it is you want to do in a few short months if you really had to. So why don't you, yeah. So like, why don't you write me your resignation letter and I will mail it in 6 months and figure it out. And people are usually like, what? Because when you really have that pressure, you're going to figure it out. So I think in some ways that kind of helped us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see in your line of work that some of the roadblocks have to do with people's careers? Cause I do see that personally. Like I've had multiple clients in the last few months that have completely left their careers. Teachers and nurses are the top two that I personally see the most burned out. They have the, you know, very, very difficult work-life balance situation. I've had quite a few in the last year or two that are like, I'm not able to quit now, but the writing's on the wall and I can't heal, get out of this high cortisol, high stress situation in a 12-hour nursing job where I don't see sunlight all day and I don't, you know, I can't even eat lunch because I'm too busy and there's short staff and insert all the issues that are happening right now in that type of work.
Right.
Do you see that as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's nursing and teachers as well. I mean, and even like people in my personal life that I know are both. And I come from a background of school psychology as well. So like, I definitely know my fair share of teachers. And yeah, there's a lot of burnout and exhaustion. And like, teachers are, they're so underpaid too, like on top of it. And their expectation, it's a really hard job. It's a really hard job, you know, and I think they've got a lot of pressure from both, like, you know, from school districts, from admin on the government side of things, from parents. Like, there's a lot of stuff they're trying to navigate. It's definitely a hard role and they're burnt out. And they've got a lot of kids and they've got testing, all the testing stuff. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's hard, but it's not impossible to change. And I think that's the important thing to remember. Like, just because something's hard doesn't mean they can't work on things and make huge changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for some too, it's part of, you know, detaching from the identity of what it means to do teaching or nursing or insert whatever career choice. I do see a lot of, you know, especially when you've been in the same career for 10 plus years, it becomes your identity.
Definitely. I think people, they think also because I've invested this much education and time into it, that I have to continue this role and do this for the rest of my life. Right. Like, you know, it would be awful. It'd be such a waste if I went off and did something else, or it's unknown. It's just unknown. Mm-hmm. Right. That can be really tough for people to navigate. But if you hate something, you can quit. Right. Like, I mean, it really comes down to that. And there's other opportunities and jobs out there and so forth. And but it can definitely get in the way. Yeah. Also with health goals, especially, like, I'm just thinking about in a school environment, like, there's always lots of bad things to eat.
So people
with, like, their health goals, and they're tired, and then if you have kids on top of it, and you've been teaching all day, and then you know you've got your kids, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, because and what I see too, especially with teachers, is their day just starts so early, and if you have to get kids up and off to daycare or school, it's like a double whammy of that. And I personally, you know, not to knock anyone's career choices or what they're in, I just don't think from a physiological standpoint, especially as women, I don't think our bodies are designed to have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and start the day running and do that piece for 12 plus hours. I mean, honestly, it's longer for some people that are up at 5:30, and their morning starts with, like, all right, you got to get on the Peloton and pack lunches and get the kids ready and drop off and get to work and then come home. And it's a whole second shift after you get the kids home, prepping dinner, recovering from the day. It's a 14, 16 hour day.
Right.
Day in and day out. And then, you know, the weekends roll around and you're just recovering from the week, or it's just a hustle.
Yeah, it's so hard to know. I sometimes try to think, like, what was it like for us 20,000 years ago?
Uh-huh.
And so,
yeah,
some ways I think it's always been really hard for women. I mean, I'm speaking as a woman. I'm not it's not hard for men too, but I just reflect on women more because I am one, right? And I think to myself, like, man, like, we had to do, like, how many kids were we having? Right? How many kids? Like, we were always pregnant, breastfeeding. I mean, children, people were dying all the time. I mean, we had to, like, there were famines, like, having to gather food. Like, I just think, like, there's always been a lot of stress and hard. In some ways, I think there's more opportunities now for women to get out of that.
100%. Yes.
And it's a lot of what we're saying, that, like, there's opportunities now. I just don't think that women had 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 20,000 years ago, whatever. But it has to come down to being okay with uncertainty, taking risks, and being open-minded about opportunities, and really embracing the idea of life design.
Yes. Tell me more about the life design stuff.
It's basically this shift in realizing that you actually have a say in how you live your life. And that was really new for me. Like, right around 30, I started kind of learning about this idea. And when I realized that I could have a say, mm-hmm. like a real say, and how I lived, spent my days, and I could design my life, and I was never a victim of, like, my past decisions or any of those sort of things, and that there were opportunities in places. Like, don't knock an opportunity before you've even explored it. That people will tend to do that. They'll tell you all the reasons why something won't work before they've even really considered something, right? So yeah, that's really what, you know, life design comes down to. And like entrepreneurship and life design kind of go hand in hand because you got to pay the bills, right?
Yeah.
And usually people want a nice life that costs money. So, you know, you could design a life where you live in a cardboard box somewhere and common, but I've never heard of somebody that actually wanted that. So yeah, you need to be able to fund said life. So like learning how to maybe use your skills in a way that's more entrepreneurial, you know, you can use social media, you can use the internet. There's so many different ways to make money and that don't even need to be on the internet, right? So just those opportunities, I just don't think they were there. So while I totally agree with what you're saying about like running around this modern world, it's hard. I think it's been hard for a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And I do agree with you. We have more opportunities than ever before. I think some of us, and I've fallen into this trap as well, you just get like addicted to the busyness and the high fast pace.
Yeah.
Of doing and, you know, going and be like staying victim to that a little bit too, where you're like, well, this is just how it's always been. Or
yeah. And your nervous system like adjusts, like stress has a very addictive component to it. Mm-hmm. And it can feel deeply uncomfortable to rest.
100%.
I know somebody that would have panic attacks when they would rest because it was so uncomfortable when they would feel their body rest that they thought they were dying and they would have a panic attack because they were so used to being stressed out. And yeah, it's really, I mean, you ask anyone what they're doing or how they've been, and they usually say they've been busy. And I think we get a lot of self-worth and importance from being busy. And yeah, it's like our nervous system is always like, go, 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 go. And it's very unsettling to not be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love for you to share a little bit more about your water skiing. Speaking of risk, being a little bit more of a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
So Lindsay, if you guys don't follow her, is like a wild woman on water skis.
Yeah, I actually went to, I was an alpine ski racer when I was young.
Okay.
I went to a sports academy and was really serious with alpine ski racing. And so I grew up competing.
Okay.
There's definitely that side of me. And I water skied in the summer for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I grew up in the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York, which is like all mountains and lakes. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when the ice would come off the lake in sometimes May, June, because it's cold up there, we'd get out water skis and we'd be out there water skiing. It was just like a fun thing to do. But water skiing, like most people think of water skiing and they think just like on two skis, like going just behind a boat. But there's like a sport, like a real competitive sport side to water skiing. There's different events. I slalom, and that's going around, you know, the buoys, and the rope gets progressively shorter as you run it. So it's hard on your body. So like when I was in my 20s and like grad school and I couldn't go all the time, I kind of just stopped water skiing because anytime I would go, like you couldn't like touch my back for like 10 days. And I would just be like, if I can't ski all the time, like it's just not worth it. Right. It's kind of like when you lift weights, like for the first time, you know how sore you are.
Yeah.
But if you all the time, you don't get that delayed onset muscle soreness. Right.
Right.
So with water skiing, it was like DOMS times 300. Like it's like, so I just didn't do it. So then I had my son, my husband's not a water skier. And then my son, when he went to school, I kind of was feeling in the worst shape of my life at that point.
Hmm.
I felt like I had lost a lot of muscle and core strength. And I had, because I really, you know, focused on having, you know, a baby. And there just really wasn't that much time to like work out and do those sort of things.
So, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Right? It's fine. But I was ready to be strong. It was never about get my body back or any kind of thing like that. It was like, I'm ready to feel strong again and have something for me. And I like to have something big that I'm striving for. Like just, I've never just been like, yeah, I want to just look fit or something like that. Right. Like I like the idea of like getting really strong for like sport specific, like athletic performance.
Okay.
I was talking to my dad and he was like, go water skiing. You literally live near the best water ski school in the world, which we do have here in Santa Rosa Beach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people travel from all over the world. Professional water skiers are there. Like it's a Pico ski school. And so I said, okay, gosh, I haven't had put a water ski on in like 13 years. Like I'm just going to go. And I went and it felt so good. I felt like myself for the first time, not like the mother side of me is not me, but like a version of myself that was like for me. I think a lot of moms lose touch with. And after that, I've just been training ever since. And this year I'm going to start, my first tournament is actually this coming weekend. And I'm really excited to be skiing in tournaments and like on a competitive level. And yeah, I love it. So I talk a lot about water skiing, you know, and training online. And it's not even just the physical aspects, but it's been so good for me mentally.
Yeah.
Because all of these things that we're talking about like optimal performance and flourishing and like going after your goals and like managing things that are hard and building discipline, like being immersed in water skiing, like really helps me personally work on all of that stuff. So,
yeah. In how does it help you personally work on those things? Just because of like how challenging it is and physical?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And it's a very unforgiving sport.
Yeah.
And if you're never going to have your best, like all, you're not going to perform your best all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's so obvious in water skiing when you're not performing your best because the course is always the same. Like, so you know that you on a good day can run, you know, 6 buoys at a certain rope length, but then you come out and you're falling on one pass before that. Right. And not being attached to a poor performance, not feeling like you're worthless, not feeling like attached to the results. Like it's really about trusting your process and your plan and just showing up. That whole 1% thing that we were talking about, like I think at the beginning of this conversation, just like a little bit of improvement, working on it, you know, each day. The more challenges that we can put ourselves in, I think it just shapes us to be better people.
I think the older we get, the less we are willing to put ourselves in those types of, not saying that people listening need to like go do water skiing, but
yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like as we get older, we're just like less likely to try something new?
Yeah. I think that the collective mindset on aging is really toxic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if there's something I could get up on a soapbox and talk about, like it would be that. Especially for women. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I hear all the time is just like, it's just hard for me now. Cause like, you know, I'm old and like there's all these ideas about aging that are just really negative.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think, how many adults do you know that play a sport?
The only sport that I'm seeing a lot of people playing right now around here is pickleball.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of pickleball, but it's, you know, my husband and I play a lot of pickleball. He plays a ton. And, you know, I've gotten more into it in the last few months. I've done some clinics and one-on-one just to like work on my skills. I can play in a game, but I don't want to just like show up and make it through. I want to spin shots. I want to be good at it. And it's fun and it's competitive, but I also have heard people say like, oh, you know, I just don't want to roll an ankle or, I have a neighbor right now that's training for a half marathon. And one of the other neighbors was like, oh, running as we get older is just so hard on your body. You hear a lot of comments like that, especially among women and men.
Yes. Just
letting yourself off the hook on doing something like going for a run because it's so hard on your body, or pickleball, I might roll an ankle, or, you know, I don't know.
You could also get in a car accident on the way to pickleball. I mean, it's just,
there's
risk in all
everything
you do, but I think people like to use aging as an excuse not to do things. And we have just this idea that it's just decline, decline, decline. I'm 42. And I mean, the things I hear other people say, I've got people who think I'm nuts because of my water skiing and training and so forth, because I'm 42. I'm like, you know, I don't feel that way. Luckily, I come from a family, like my grandmother passed away a few years ago at 108.
Wow.
She was traveling up until COVID. She started tap dancing lessons when she was 80. She started piano lessons in her 90s. Her advice was to wear a hat, eat a lot of garlic, and never live like you're going to die soon. So, you know, if you think it's just all over, you're not going to try new things, and you're kind of putting yourself in the grave by doing that, right?
Yeah.
My dad turns 80 this year, and he still snow skis and water skis and does all of those sort of things. So luckily, I have a lot of like good, examples in my family. I feel like I should also shout out my mom, who's in her 70s and works with a trainer. No one's giving up, right?
Yeah.
But there is a lot of giving up in our society. And I think, I mean, the narrative around aging for women is rough.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's true, most of it. I really don't. But if you believe it to be true and you start living as if it's true, then it kind of becomes true.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Well, I love this. And where can the audience find you? I'm going to link your Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram's the way to go.
Okay.
I think it's just the easiest way to connect. It's dr_Lindsay. And from there, there's my bio to my website, which you and I were just joking. My website's Lindsay Havlicek Bell. No one's, unless you're writing it down, and you're not going to spell Havlicek right. So just go to dr_Lindsay. And connect with me there. And
she's going to give listeners 10% off if you sign up for a month of her coaching. And remind me again, your coaching is weekly. So when you're really working with someone, it's kind of an intensive where you're on with them every week for month to month, right?
Yeah, I ask people to commit to a month at a time. I make people sign up for 6 months or anything like that, just a month at a time. And we work hard. We have 4 sessions in that month. And sometimes people work with me for, 3 months, sometimes 6 months. I've got people that have been working with me a lot longer than that. It's just really up to people. There's no pressure or expectations with that, but you need to commit to something. And so that's why, for yourself, right? Not for me, but for yourself. And that's why I like 1 month at a time, week to week, because 2 weeks tends to be too long, I think, for people. Yeah. You really have to show up for yourself. And that's kind of how I help my clients do it.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Fueled and Free podcast. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Learn more at margaretannpowell.com. And follow me on Instagram @MargaretAnnPowell.